Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, bitches? How's everybody doing today? Got a big ol' Thursday show for you. Yesterday was fun. Yesterday we did the report card on President Obama's time in office. If you haven't seen that yet, I highly, highly recommend you go see that. Stop what you're doing right now. Stop listening to the live show and go see it. It's on YouTube. It's just one long segment from yesterday. It's a little over an hour. And I try to give you all the positives and all the negatives of Obama's time in office, and then I give you a grade at the end of it. I'm sure most of the people listening to me now already heard it, but it was good. And it was it felt good to finally get all that off my chest, you know, like lay it all out there, tell you my exact opinion on Barack Obama. And so it's already got almost 50,000 views in one day. I'd love that for that video to get, like, freakishly big, but we'll see. We'll see. Over 100,000 would be nice. But anyway, a lot of stuff to get to today. We have a bunch of hearings for Donald Trump's picks, and we also have a bunch of scandals and pseudo-scandals, and I also have a list of who Hillary Clinton was going to put in her cabinet. Oh, boy. That should be a good segment. We just got a lot of stuff to get to. So, without further ado, let's get started here. And we're going to do that with a little something about Donald Trump's picks and their conflicts of interest. Then we'll get into Donald Trump's conflicts of interest. And we just got a lot to get to. So let's do it. So a bunch of hearings for Donald Trump's appointments are taking place this week, but there's some cause for concern about his picks. So Huffington Post reports here, 4 of the 9 Trump nominees scheduled for hearings this week still haven't disclosed key financial information to the Office of Government Ethics, which is charged with making sure they don't break federal ethics laws. Of the 4 nominees who had not submitted their ethics paperwork as of Monday afternoon, 2 of them, Commerce Secretary-designate Wilbur Ross and Education Secretary-designate Betsy DeVos, are billionaires who have never worked in government. The Trump nominees' failure to fully comply with the normal procedures for ethics vetting prior to their confirmation hearings is raising alarm bells for the OGE, the Office on Governmental Ethics, and independent ethicists. Federal law requires presidential nominees to divest holdings that may conflict with their official duties. So this is yet another example of seeing Donald Trump and his team do the exact kind of stuff that was the fear that Hillary Clinton and her team would do if they were elected, which is skirting government ethics laws, trying to, you know, sweep under the rug gigantic conflicts of interest, not disclosing all the information. And that's what's happening with Trump's picks. There's a crazy fact out there about how Donald Trump's cabinet is the richest in U.S. history, and they have more wealth than an ungodly percentage of the population. And with stuff like this, you see what's really happening behind the scenes. I have no doubt that Betsy DeVos, for example, I don't know anything about Wilbur Ross, but for Betsy DeVos, she has invested in various entities that would conflict with her official duties as education secretary. So we know that she's invested in private schools. We know that she, in fact, doesn't even really believe in public education, even though Donald Trump wants her to be education secretary. So we have somebody who doesn't believe in what they're doing and has a financial conflict of interest in the opposite direction. So she would have an incentive to go in the direction of privatization, even for financial personal interest, apart from ideology, which I don't doubt the sincerity of her ideology. I think she really does want to privatize the school system throughout the U.S. But she believes that ideologically, but also she has a financial incentive to go in that direction because we know that she's invested, in not having public education in private schools. So this is that's not allowed. And if that's not allowed, because it's a direct financial conflict of interest to you carrying out your duties in the government, well, then we can't have you in that position. So instead of addressing that or divesting, she's just not submitting her a full financial disclosure. So in other words, you want the position and you want to have the conflict of interest and you want everybody to shut the fuck up and not bother you about it, which is crazy. I mean, that's nuts. That reminds me of the shit that was happening with the Clinton Foundation. How, you know, Hillary Clinton was running for president, and if anybody says, hey, hold on now, you got this thing that's the Clinton Foundation that sets up a bunch of conflicts of interest, doesn't it? They're just like, oh, yeah, charity, things, stuff, whatever, look away, who cares? No, that's not okay. You can't have a foundation that takes, for example, Qatar gave Bill Clinton $1 million for the foundation for his birthday, and then you were Secretary of State number one, so you did favors for them then, you approved a giant weapons deal for them. But number two, then you wanted to be president, and what? We're supposed to believe that different, various governments around the world and various corporations that give gifts to the Clinton Foundation, you're not going to do favors for them? Of course you're going to do favors for them. We're not stupid. We're not fucking stupid. And then they say, well, no, see, this is just about charity. Yeah, I'm sure. Of all the charities in the world, the governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar and various giant corporations, they just chose, hey, we'll just happen to give it to the Clintons. It's not like they're in a position of power and they could do favors for us. We're not stupid, guys. Stop treating us like we are. It's the same thing with this garbage. You want to be the education secretary, but you're directly financially invested in ruining public schools and making them private. If you don't believe in public schools, do us a favor. Get the fuck out of that position. Don't even consider yourself for that position. So it's a really sad thing to watch. And you have Donald Trump, who, man, what an amazing about-face he did. I mean, if you look at that closing argument ad that he made, it's crazy. He talks about how, oh, there's too many lobbyists and, big money interests that are running the country, and we need to make America great again and throw the bums out and drain the swamp and all that stuff. And then now, with all of his picks and with how his picks are acting, it's clear that the swamp is still full. It's clear that they're building another swamp. From picking multiple people in Goldman Sachs to be in your administration, to picking Steve Mnuchin, a fast food CEO, for labor secretary, when the guy openly doesn't even believe in labor. He said, I want to go towards total automation. He's an Ayn Rand devotee. And Ayn Rand is as extreme as it gets when it comes to libertarian economics and anarcho-capitalism. Doesn't believe in safety nets, doesn't believe in unions. This is the guy you want for labor secretary. And then you got somebody like Betsy DeVos for education, which doesn't believe in public education, and she's also a Christian fundamentalist. So this is not good. And the Democrats are going to have to really grow a backbone and draw some lines and let people know, like, hey, assholes, just want to be clear here. This isn't even a choice I have to make. This is the law and the rules. You have to give a financial disclosure. You didn't give it, so get the fuck out. Get the fuck out. I'm not interested. I'm not going to let you sit in front of me and do a hearing when you haven't met the basic requirements. That's like you go for a job. They say, okay, let me see your resume. They go, that's okay. I'm not going to give you my resume. I asked you for the resume, and you're trying to get this job, and I'm responsible for hiring you or not, so let me see your resume. I'm not going to give you my resume, but I'd like you to hire me anyway. I just asked for your resume. I don't care. I'm not going to give it to you, but go ahead. Ask me any other questions you'd like. I'm not going to ask you any fucking questions. I asked for your fucking resume, dipshit. That's what's happening here. That's exactly what's happening. No, I didn't do a financial disclosure, and I know I'm required to do financial disclosure. I didn't do it, but hey, prove me anyway. Fuck off. How about that? We gotta be objective about this stuff. And all the shit that we would have went after Hillary Clinton for, and we're consistent. I went after her like nobody's business. But I'm going to do the same thing for Trump when he starts violating the same kinds of rules and laws and his people try to, you know, skirt obvious, ethics issues. So this is disgusting. And no, I wouldn't allow you to get by, and any Democrat who does should be primaried and should be, you know, run out of fucking town for how shitty they are and how they can't even obstruct even the most obvious injustices and horrible picks. Okay. Now, let's go to Trump's press conference yesterday. Well, actually, should I do that? No. You know what? Let me go first to the big old scandal. The scandal that wasn't. All right, let me set this up for you. The other day, there was a big story that blew up first on CNN and then on the internet about Donald Trump, and I was instantly skeptical of it because the claim was preposterous. So Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept lays out the timeline here and exactly what happened, and it appears like my instincts were correct, and indeed, it was a bullshit story. So let me lay all this out for you, and then we'll come back and discuss here. So they explain, back in October, a political operative and former employee of the British intelligence agency MI6 was being paid by Democrats to dig up dirt on Trump. Before that, he was paid by anti-Trump Republicans. He tried to convince countless media outlets to publish a long memo he had written filled with explosive accusations about Trump's treason, business corruption, and sexual escapades, with the overarching theme that Trump was in servitude to Moscow because they were blackmailing and bribing him. Despite how many had it, no media outlets published it. That was because these were anonymous claims unaccompanied by any evidence at all, and even in this more permissive media environment, nobody was willing to be journalistically associated with it. As the New York Times executive editor, Dean Baquet, forgive me for mispronouncing that, put it last night, he would not publish these, quote, totally unsubstantiated allegations because we, like others, investigated the allegations and haven't corroborated them, and we felt we're not in the business of publishing things we can't stand by. Now, let me pause here for those of you who don't know exactly what the fuck I'm referring to. The claim is Russia has tapes of Donald Trump having hookers piss on him. He's compromised, and now he's a puppet of Vladimir Putin. So that's the claim that's being made. Let's continue. The closest this operative got to success was convincing Mother Jones' David Corn to publish an October 31st article, so this has been out there for a while, reporting that a former senior intelligence officer for a Western country claims that he provided the FBI with memos based on his recent interactions with Russian sources, contending the Russian government has for years tried to co-opt and assist Trump. But because this was just an anonymous claim unaccompanied by any evidence for any specifics, which Korn withheld, it made very little impact. All of that changed yesterday. Why? And this actually, to be clear, was like 2 or 3 days ago now. What changed was the intelligence community's resolution to cause this all to become public and to be viewed as credible. In December, John McCain provided a copy of this report to the FBI and demanded they take it seriously. At some point last week, the chiefs of the intelligence agencies decided to declare that this ex-British intelligence operative was credible enough that his allegations warranted briefing both Trump and Obama about them, thus stamping some sort of vague, indirect, and deniable official approval on these accusations. Someone, by all appearances, numerous officials, then went to CNN to tell them they had done this, causing CNN to go on air and, in the gravest of tones, announce that the breaking news, that the nation's top intelligence officials briefed Obama and Trump that Russia had compiled information that compromised President-elect Trump. CNN refused to specify what these allegations were on the ground that they could not verify them. But with this document in the hands of multiple media outlets, it was only a matter of time, a small amount of time, before someone would step up and publish the whole thing. BuzzFeed quickly obliged, airing all of the unvetted anonymous claims about Trump, no sourcing, no details, misspellings, and geographical mistakes in the document. So, what we have here, to give you the Cliff Notes version of it, somebody who was a paid operative against Trump, first for anti-Trump Republicans, then for the Democrats. This guy came up with this report, and he was a former British intelligence officer, and he wrote out a report that said all these explosive things against Trump. Oh, yeah, Trump is in cahoots with the government, and also they're blackmailing him. By the way, which is it? Notice how those things are contradictory. On the one hand, you have Democrats saying, and our intelligence community saying, well, you know, Donald Trump and the Russian government are working hand in hand, and they basically love each other, and that's what's happening. And then in the next breath, they say, actually, no, wrong. You have the Russian government is doing blackmail against Trump because they have a tape of hookers pissing on him. So they hate each other, and Putin's secretly controlling him because Trump will do anything to not have that tape released. Which is it? Those are fucking contradictory. Do they love each other? Do they hate each other? And one's blackmailing the other one. So, but logic, you know, consistency, fuck all that, who cares? I'm just going to, anything that's anti-Trump, I'm going to latch onto and hold on to that and make that argument. And this won't be like the boy who cried wolf, where because I made so many dumbass, untrue arguments against Trump, that people won't believe the real ones when they come up. So, what you have here is a guy who is by definition untrustworthy because he's being paid by, first it was anti-Trump Republicans, then Democrats, to dig up dirt on Trump. As opposed to, they in some circles, they're framing this as an objective intelligence, our intelligence community, which is such a stand-up community, which didn't say that we should invade Iraq, and they had weapons of mass destruction, and they did 9/11, and didn't topple governments all around the world, and didn't do torture, and then cover it up. And so our intelligence agency is saying it. No, it's a guy who's paid opposition to Trump, who said it, shopped it around everywhere. None of the news organizations ran with it because they're like, okay, we don't trust this guy. The news organizations are no fucking prize. Usually they run with anything. The only thing that changed, and this happened a few months ago, the only thing that changed was anonymous people at our intelligence agency said, let's say that this is credible enough and let's us shop it around to the different outlets. And then they did that, and then CNN took the bait. And I, by the way, I love the dirty trick CNN did. They go, oh, it's unverified, so we can't tell you what the claims are, but we're going to tell you that there are claims and that Trump is, quote, compromised by the Russian government. But if it's unverified, then how do you run with that part of the story? How do you run with, well, he's compromised by the Russian government, but we can't tell you the specifics because it's unverified? To say the second part, that you're saying the second part. So in other words, the first thing has to be true for the second thing to be true. The claims would have to be true in order for you to say he's compromised. How do you say he's compromised, but then say, but we don't know if what we're basing this on is accurate? Well, then you don't know. So, and then Jake Tapper went, you know, defending it on CNN the next day when Trump called it out in a press conference and was like, this is bullshit. And the only thing Jake Tapper was able to hide behind is, hold on now. We didn't say the thing it said in the report. We just said that there is a report and that you're compromised by the Russian government. Guys, it's so sad to watch this unfold because there's no evidence. I just told you how this isn't credible. There's no sourcing, no details, misspellings in the document, geographical mistakes. The guy was paid opposition. The story was already out there for a few months and nobody picked it up because it wasn't fucking credible. And now because our intelligence, some people in the deep state and our intelligence agencies who are, some of them are against Trump because they decided, hey, let's just use this against him. That doesn't make it magically true. And the fact that there are people who are Democrats who are like, good enough, it's against Trump, so I agree with it. Again, you're doing boy who cried wolf. You think you're the resistance and you're attacking him. You're not attacking him. If anything, you're helping him. Because a lot of people are going to roll their eyes and they're going to go, come on, that's, you know, my sister was talking to me the other day, and she made a good point about this. She's like, okay, you know what? I was telling her, look, I'm skeptical. I'm just going to lay it out there. I don't believe it. she was like, okay, here's my test. My test is I'm going to be agnostic about it, but if the tapes themselves don't surface within, you know, 3 days, 4 days, then I think it's bullshit. So again, people are like, it's true because they say it. Well, whatever happened to evidence? Whatever. So, you know, if the tape somehow leaked, or if we have the name of somebody who we know is credible, who says, look, they kind of sent me the tape, I know it exists, well, then that's something different. But no, this is just fucking he said, she said garbage, and the original source is a guy who was paid opposition to Donald Trump by anti-Trump Republicans and then by Democrats, and the document he's using to source it, there's no evidence of it in what he's saying. He can't prove any of it, and the fucking document has things even like geographical errors and misspellings. So how do you trust that? No. I don't think this is true, and I think that you're actually hurting the resistance and the opposition to Trump, because it smells like dirty tricks, because it probably is. It probably is. And now we're in a weird position where it looks like there's an all-out war between some elements of the CIA and the executive branch of the government, soon to be President of the United States. That ain't good, man. We have a war between the deep state, who's really running shit, and the president-elect. Now, obviously, I hate Donald Trump. That goes without saying. But I also hate the deep state. The deep state, their whole thing is let's continue to be standoffish with Russia. And they wanted Hillary Clinton for obvious reasons. For example, Hillary was more hawkish in Syria. She wanted to be on the side of the rebels. The deep state's on the side of the rebels. And, you know, Trump wants to move away from the Cold War mindset and the standoff situation with Russia. The deep state does not want that. So, or some aspects of the deep state, because it appears like some segments of the FBI are on Trump's side, but some in the CIA are against Trump. But either way, it's sad that this is the point that we're at, that Democrats, who for the longest time have argued, rightly so, don't trust a goddamn word the intelligence agencies say without hard evidence. Now they totally flip because the target happens to be our political enemy. Well, then you're an unprincipled douchebag. I'll just say it. You're just unprincipled because, again, these are the same agencies that are responsible for toppling foreign governments, overthrowing democratic regimes, installing puppet regimes to help our corporations. These are the same agencies that are responsible for, just recently with the war in Iraq, having misinformation on that. Same agencies that are responsible for torture and then covering it up. They're not trustworthy just because they're in the intelligence community. And for the media to do the old, you know, hey, they say this, the intelligence agencies say this, and Trump says that. Well, no, because then you're giving the misimpression on some issues that there's a debate when there's not a debate. So sometimes Trump says the thing that's utter bullshit, and it's the intelligence community that is 100% factually right. Well, in that instance, you say Trump is wrong and the intelligence community is right. Don't present a both sides garbage argument, because the truth is absent in that equation. You're just letting people serve their own confirmation bias if you give both sides and don't give the truth. This is one of those instances where when they say the intelligence community says this and Trump says that, well, you got to call it for what it is and say the intelligence community is nowhere near proving their claim and the source is questionable as fuck. So it appears like, as of right now, there's zero evidence of that, and Trump is right and they're wrong. If you don't present it like that, you are doing a disservice to the idea of having a press that upholds the truth. So just don't stop doing bullshit arguments against them and stop believing every anti-Trump thing you hear. And by the way, are we really to believe that a guy who was caught on tape saying, I grab women by their pussy, I don't even wait, and somehow weathered that storm where he admitted to doing sexual assault on tape. That guy, who also appeared in two porns, he appeared in two of them. He wasn't fucking in it, to be clear, but he was in them. He was at the beginning of these Playboy things. He was in two porns and was caught on tape saying, I grab them by their pussy, I don't even wait. Now I'm supposed to believe that this guy feels shame, and that if he's caught on tape by a hidden camera with a hooker doing some shit to him, all of a sudden he's going to be like, oh, now I must follow whatever Vladimir Putin says. Does Trump seem like the kind of guy where Vladimir Putin was like, I have tape of you, you will now do what I want, that Trump will be like, yes, master? Trump would immediately, anybody who says anything, even 2% against him that he views as aggressive, he snaps. He's like, oh, that's what you want to do? Okay, well, let me just tell you, you're a liar. You're a sad, pathetic, bad person. You think, he would be a puppet to anybody? I mean, don't get me wrong, he's going to serve the establishment, but he's going to serve them because of their mutual financial ties and them giving donations to him. If you treat Trump in that kind of way, with like the I'm threatening you, I'm blackmailing you, you know, you're my enemy kind of, you will now do what I say thing, well, how would he respond to that? He would snap and he would obviously not listen. That's how Donald Trump is. So it's just not true. I don't think this is true, and I think it's silly if you believe it. And if I'll believe it when I see it. I'll put it at that, and I really don't want to see it either way. Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump went after the media in his first press conference in 6 months. We'll watch, and then we'll discuss, and then we're going to talk about his business ties and what he's going to do about that. So stay right there, and yet again, as I say this, I do not have – this is like becoming a thing for me now. I don't have – I used to always be on point with having break music up, and I even used to – back in the day, I would have you guys pick it, and then I'd put it up. But now I've just been slacking. I stopped asking you to pick it, and – then I stopped even picking it. And then I come on air, and it's time for a break, and I got nothing to cut to, which is dumb. But anyway, now I just randomly pulled up a song in my recommended on YouTube. So there you go. Be right back, guys. Stay right there.
Baby. Jimmy B when you were starting. Marta outsmart the robber. Build a session with Bacardi bourbon. Kerosene. Promise me one machine.
What you want?
Same way the prima donna. Never leave me, I'm a stunner. Chili that I'm never running. The boys they all forgive me. I done seen it rain with them. I'ma spend my night with them. I can put carrots all over you. Carrots all over you. Never mind me on the pot. Man, I be getting high with these fools. And she's down a friend's face, but she's so rocking. And she a real bad, bad. King got a Photoshop bitch. No limit. I see Mama murder that. No limit, baby. She a ghetto D girl. No limit. Just know when you're always in Miami. There's no limit, baby.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back. Okay. The next story is tricky as a motherfucker. So, that's why we're going to cover it. Because that's what we do, bitch. Donald Trump went after the media in his first press conference in 6 months. So let's watch. He's going to get into it with a CNN host here, and then we'll come back and discuss.
Any information that turned out to be so false and fake, out. I think it's a disgrace. And I say that, and I say that. And that's something that Nazi Germany would have done and did do. I think it's a disgrace. That information that was false and fake and never happened got released to the public. As far as BuzzFeed, which is a failing pile of garbage, writing it, I think they're going to suffer the consequences. They already are. And as far as CNN going out of their way to build it up, and by the way, we just found out I was coming down. Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm. It was just reported that it wasn't this Michael Cohen they were talking about. So all night long, it's Michael Cohen. I said, I want to see your passport. He brings his passport to my office. I say, hey, wait a minute. He didn't leave the country. He wasn't out of the country. They had Michael Cohen of the Trump Organization was in Prague. It turned out to be a different Michael Cohen. It's a disgrace what took place. It's a disgrace. And I think they ought to apologize to start with Michael Cohen.
Since you're attacking us, can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect, since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance to ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you say categorically?
She's asking a question. Don't be rude.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you
no, I'm not going to give you a question. I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you state categorically?
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically that nobody. No, Mr. President-elect, that's not appropriate.
Okay, so there's a lot to break down here and a lot to talk about. We just did the segment, but to run through it real quick, what Trump is so angry about and what he's referring to is a story that CNN ran with, and it blew up online, especially on Twitter, and then BuzzFeed, you know, ran the ball into the end zone. But there is a paid former GOP anti-Trump operative and then paid by the Democrats against Trump guy who also was former British intelligence who shopped a story around to different outlets who said, hey, I have this explosive report on Trump with all this information. And in the report was really nonsensical claims that he provided no evidence for. Like, for example, the big one being, Russia has a tape of hookers pissing on Trump. This happened months ago, and nobody ran with the story because the guy seemed to be not credible, and he was fucking paid by the opposition. Well, fast forward to today, and there were some people in our intelligence agencies, in the CIA, people who've demonstrated themselves to be anti-Trump. Now, there are other aspects of the deep state that are anti-Hillary, but in this case, they were anti-Trump, and they said, yeah, let us shop it around and say that this is totally real and this guy's trustworthy. So they did that. Then CNN goes on air, and they run with this story of, and they don't give any of the specifics because they know it's unverified, and they say it. So they go, the U.S. intelligence agencies are now saying that Donald Trump is compromised by Russia. And they run with that as a breaking news story for a couple hours. Donald Trump is compromised by Russia, says U.S. intelligence agency. Now, we can't tell you why, and we can't give you the information behind it because it's not verified. So they don't bring up the videotape of hookers allegedly pissing on him because they know it might be bullshit and there's zero evidence for it. So they cover their tracks by saying, well, we didn't discuss that part. But they are running with the core of the story, which is Trump is compromised by Russia. So Trump is mad because they ran with that story based on nothing. And Jake Tapper, by the way, after this press conference, they came back to him, and Jake Tapper, you know, was all angry, and he's like, Mr. Trump, you're lying. We never, you know, said what was in that report. Yeah, but Jake, how do you present the conclusion of said report, but you don't give the evidence that led to such conclusion? So in other words, you presented step two, but you didn't bring up step one because you said step one is unverified. Well, if step one is unverified, the actual stuff that's in the report, well, then how can you say step two is true? You can't, but you did. But everybody on CNN ran with that. Now, BuzzFeed, they were like, fuck it, we'll publish the whole report. So they did publish the report. And then everybody who looked at the report, who's not a partisan hack, went, this looks like garbage. Why? Because there's no sourcing, no details, there's misspellings in the report, and there's basic geographical mistakes, as well as, like, Trump actually was right laying it out there. They said, oh, Trump's lawyer went to Prague and, you know, had a meeting with the Russians or something. And they go and they look at that, they talk to that guy. He's like, I've never been to Prague in my life. Go ahead, you can check my records. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, that appears to be true. So in other words, this shocker, this guy who was paid, a former British intelligence agent who was paid to do opposition research on Trump by first Republicans, then by Democrats, with a report that sounds preposterous, it turns out that report is probably preposterous. So now Trump is rightly mad that, come on, man, like, what the fuck? What the fuck? You guys ran with that? And so he's now taking it out on CNN and going, fake news, fake news, fake news. So on the one hand, in terms of that report, in my mind, there's no evidence to prove. If the tape exists and it leaks, then I'll believe it. But if you're not going to give me hard evidence, why the fuck would I believe it when the story is super, super sketchy? So, and this is not me saying I like Trump. I fucking despise Trump, but that doesn't mean every anti-Trump argument is accurate. And then also, just like we brought up before, which is it, Democrats? So Democrats make two claims simultaneously. One is Trump and Putin are best friends and they're working together and they love each other. And now the other claim is Trump and Putin hate each other and Putin is blackmailing Trump and Trump is his puppet. Which is it? Do they love each other or do they hate each other and one's blackmailing the other? Which is it? It can't be both. You have to pick one. But they don't care. At this point, anything that's anti-Trump, okay, let's latch onto it and go with it. So Trump, I think, is justified in his anger over this. But now the other angle of it, which is another really, really concerning angle, is, yes, he is setting a horrible precedent by basically telling CNN, no, I'm not going to let you talk. You're not going to ask me a question, and that's my decision, and that's the end of the conversation. Well, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, hold on now, big guy. You're the president-elect now. So you're not just campaigning. Now, when you were campaigning, I'm of the belief that even in your campaign, you should be forced to abide by the First Amendment as if you are the government already. So in other words, he had a media blacklist because people asked him tough questions and he didn't like those outlets. He's like, oh, I'm going to put you on the blacklist. You can't ask me anything. I'm not even going to let you in my event. He would let in white nationalist radio hosts, but he wouldn't let in, like, legitimate political outlets, ones that are good, ones that are bad. He banned he banned so many people. National Review, conservative outlet, he didn't like, banned. Washington Post, banned. Politico, banned. So he should have allowed them in then to ask him questions. But now that you're president-elect, it's not a choice, dipshit. You got to answer the questions. Even if they're wrong, even if they're saying things where I agree with you and I actually think you're right and the claims are bogus, you have to field those questions. Now you are a representative of the government of the United States of America. And for you to shut out people who are the media, well, then that would be you basically saying the First Amendment doesn't really apply when it comes to me, and I'm not going to answer whoever you know I don't want to answer. Well, no, now you are president. Now you are the leader of this country. You are a representative of the government, so you don't have a choice. Now it's, you know, there's a free press, so you have to respond to them. You can't, you know, bunker yourself in a hole and say, I'm never going to answer any questions, because then that's a fundamental breakdown of freedom of the press and transparency in government, and that's not okay. So, yeah, he's setting a horrible precedent by saying, I'm not going to answer your question, you're fake news, and you're done. A lot of people are happy because they're like, oh, well, he's right on the substance of it, so, you know, he's justified in doing this. Could you imagine Obama did that? Can you imagine Obama said to anybody, Fox News, anybody, no, I'm not going to answer your question, I'm never going to answer your question, you're fake news, move along. People would say, oh, a violation of the First Amendment of the highest order. You can't do that. You have to answer. This is a free press. You don't believe in a free press. You're an authoritarian. And guess what? If they said that, they would have been right. And now Trump's doing it. And, again, the people who are saying this is authoritarian are right. Even though I don't agree with the media on this front, you got to answer the question. So that's not okay. So there are multiple angles to this. The angle of, yes, yeah, CNN, you shouldn't have run with that story because there's no evidence for it and it's not true. So I'm not saying you should be locked up for running the story or you shouldn't have the freedom to run whatever story you want. No. Of course you have the freedom to run whatever fucking story you please. But you should be smart enough to vet it enough and to care about evidence enough to not present things that are unverifiable and unsourced and seemingly ridiculous. So, yeah, you shouldn't run that story. In the same way you shouldn't have run, for example, now obviously this is a much more serious situation, so it's different, but in terms of the lack of evidence, there's an argument to be made here. You shouldn't run, oh, Saddam did 9/11, or Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. They ran with that for so long, and then it affected the public perception of it. Well, you're going to affect the public perception. Trump is compromised by Russia. Well, what you're basing it on is garbage. So what do you mean? So you should vet, and you shouldn't do the story. But on top of that, yes, Donald Trump, you need to understand you can no longer – I mean, this is a guy who sued Bill Maher over a joke. He's a guy who threatened to sue The Onion over a satire article. He's a guy who created a media blacklist. He's a guy who said he wants U.S. Laws on free speech and free press to mirror England, so not our own. We're much more permissive, and we believe much more in freedom of speech than they do. They have all kinds – it's much easier to do a case of libel or slander or do a case of – hate speech, for example, over there. He wants to tighten up our regulation on speech and the press. So on that angle, Trump is dead wrong because he's going to want, if you do anything I don't like, that's it for you. He said, also said in this, BuzzFeed is going to, quote, suffer the consequences. What does that mean? What are you saying? Are you saying that, you know, you're going to go on a witch hunt against them and you're going to, I don't know, maybe try to use the IRS and audit them out of existence or find a way to use the government, the NSA, and spy on them and figure out dirt on – like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to do something that's against the free press, most likely. So that's not okay. So Trump is wrong because he's massively authoritarian, but also the media is wrong because you shouldn't have ran with this story because it's totally unverified, and you should know enough to not, you know, go with what is likely fake news. So it's a little bit of a nuanced picture here, but I hope I'm coming across crystal clear as to what should have happened in both cases. So Trump can't do this authoritarian garbage anymore with shouting down reporters, and you're the president now. You got to let them ask the questions, and you got to answer the fucking questions, because that's the way this game is played. This is the United States of America. But then on the other hand, also the media, look, they were wrong to run, even the way CNN ran it, where they tried to cover their tracks by saying, we're not going to say the part about the hookers pissing on them, but we're going to say he's compromised by Russia. Well, in order for that part to be true, the first part has to be true. The claims in the report have to be true, and there's no evidence of that. And the report appears to be bogus because of misspellings and geographical mistakes and basic factual errors, like with Trump's lawyer. So it's a little bit of a mixed picture, but I hope I'm coming across clear and giving you what my breakdown of it is. Okay, next. Do-do-do. Now we go to Donald Trump's business interests. Donald Trump did a press conference yesterday, and he laid out what he's going to do about his business conflicts of interest. So Huffington Post explains here, President-elect Trump announced Wednesday that he would place his two sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, in charge of his multi-billion dollar Trump organization. Quote, my two sons who are right here, Don and Eric, are going to be running the company. They're going to be running it in a very professional manner. They're not going to discuss it with me. Sherry Dillon, a financial advisor at Morgan, Lewis & Bockius, said at the event that Trump's sons would have no business-related contact with their father while he serves as president, and the company will appoint an ethics advisor to oversee any possible conflicts. The president-elect and his daughter Ivanka Trump, whose husband will become a senior White House advisor, will resign all positions in the Trump organization, Dillon said. Dillon added that the Trump organization will not make any new foreign deals during his administration. The company will still pursue domestic deals. Okay, let me be clear about this. This is utter bullshit. There's so much to say about it. So at the end of his press conference, he said something like, so it's going to be turned over to my sons, and I want to be clear that I'm going to have nothing to do with it. And if at the end of 8 years they come to me and they didn't do a good job, I'm going to say you're fired. So that means you have something to do with it. You monumental, colossal idiot. I'm going to have nothing to do with it, but I'm going to fire them if they do a bad job. That would be the definition of you having something to do with it. So what are you saying? Furthermore, is that enough lines of degrees of separation for you to be comfortable? If Hillary Clinton became president of the United States and she said, it's cool, don't worry, we're going to hand the Clinton Foundation over to Chelsea, would anybody say, oh, that's cool, yeah, there's your daughter? No, there's still a conflict of interest there. Duh, there's still a conflict of interest. Duh. If it was turned over to Chelsea, I'd say, oh, right, I'm sure. Oh, we super-duper promise, and we have an ethicist who we appointed, who I'm sure they're going to pay, so I wonder who the ethicist is going to listen to. They're going to make sure we never talk about business. I'm sure. I wouldn't trust the Clinton Foundation in Chelsea's hands. I don't trust the Trump business in Trump's son's hands. There's going to still be a connection. There's going to still be talking about this stuff, and they even say we're going to pursue domestic deals still. No. So they're doing the same kind of garbage that we have, like our campaign finance laws in this country, where it's like, well, I mean, come on. Let's be serious here. If a foreign government or a foreign entity tries to donate to politicians, we can't have that because that would be corruption, because it would be a foreign influence in our country. But if a billionaire U.S. citizen or a multinational corporation that's headquartered in the U.S. donates to our politicians, there's still corruption. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? They're not going to do favors for that. I don't know what you're talking about. Of course they are! You fucking idiots! It's the same goddamn thing! Just one person lives on a patch of dirt over yonder, and the other lives on a patch of dirt right here! So, I don't know. I don't fucking trust this. I don't believe this. He did such a bullshit, like, fucking Third World Banana Republic show he put on, where he had a table with a bunch of papers on it, and he's like, see this? These are all the documents I signed to turn over my business to my son. To my sons. Oh, well, I'm so confident now that, you know, you were setting up new businesses during the campaign season. And I was supposed to believe, no, it's cool. He bragged in the event. But Dubai offered me $2 billion yesterday or the other day to do a new hotel deal with them. I turned it down. Yeah. I'm sure that there's going to be no conflicts of interest, even though there's already been conflicts of interest. And even though, for example, you met with Indian businessmen on real estate deals when you were already elected president of the United States. You have business with Japan. You allegedly, the phone call you took from Taiwan was that China was really mad about was also because a few weeks prior, somebody from the Trump team reportedly reached out to Taiwan and said, how about we do a hotel deal over there? And so lo and behold, China and President-elect Trump talk on the phone, and China's pissed off about it. So his business deals are going to get in the way of him doing his job as president. And yes, it's going to affect, you know, this is always the problem with having business and politics intertwined is when you have that much power and you're so heavily invested monetarily with other forces, you're not going to do your job, which is representing the American people and doing right by them and caring about their agenda. You're going to do what's good for you and your own business interests, and you're going to do favors for your buddies because it's a circle jerk of money and power. That was the problem with Hillary Clinton. That's now apparently the problem with you. The only way, just like with the Clinton Foundation, you should have done a clean break even when you decided to run. Okay, that's it. The Clinton Foundation is done. I'm running for president. That's it. It's done. That's it. I'm not going to not – it's not, oh, Chelsea holds it or this happens or that happens. No. It's just totally done. You put it in a in an actual blind trust. You have nothing to do with it anymore. Trump said, oh, I'm going to do a blind trust. First of all, you're not doing a blind trust. You're giving it to your kids. That's not a blind trust. So, but he keeps saying shit like that. No, the when you ran, you should have said no more Trump Foundation, no more giant business empire. Put in the blind trust, and then, hey, later on, if I don't win or whatever happens, then I'll get back to doing it. But now that he's even elected, he's still not doing the right thing. He's still not saying, okay, I'm going to have nothing to do with it. My family has nothing to do with it now. No, he's saying my family is going to have something to do with it, but don't worry. It's going to be super duper cool. We're paying this guy to tell us whether or not, you know, we're paying this guy to tell us we can't talk about it. Gigantic conflicts of interest. And as I described to you guys before, he's $1.5 billion in debt to mostly to Wall Street. You don't think he's going to do their bidding? His debt alone is enough of a financial conflict of interest, which compromises his ability to do his job. He's not going to look out for the American people. There's no doubt about that. And if you still think that, you're naive beyond belief. All right, now we go to Rex Tillerson. Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, had his hearing to be Secretary of State start yesterday. And he's already made multiple ridiculous claims. So when asked if Saudi Arabia violates human rights, very simple question. Listen to what he said. When you designate someone or label someone, is that the most effective way to have progress? Because When you designate someone or label someone, is that the most effective way to have progress be made in Saudi Arabia or any other country? There seems to be some misunderstanding that I see the world through a different lens. I'm also clear-eyed and realistic about dealing in cultures. What I wouldn't want it to do is take some kind of precipitous action that suddenly causes the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to interrupt that. So he's doing the functional equivalent of, hey, does Saudi Arabia violate human rights? Ah, human rights. Human rights. What is that? Is it, when you designate someone or label someone, is that the most effective way to do-do-do-do-do-do-do? There seems to be a misunderstanding in viewing the world through a different lens. There are different cultures in the world. So, Rex Tillerson, are you a cultural relativist? Is that what I'm getting from it? Well, look, bro, they do it differently over there. We do it differently over here, and it's, like, totally cool, bro. So if you want to behead people in the public square and treat women as second-class citizens and say all atheists are terrorists, I mean, that's not worse. It's just, like, different, bro. Who are you to judge, bro? Is that who you are? You're a cultural relativist? You're a fucking, like, weird hippie from the 1970s? What a stupid fucking answer. We know why he's giving this answer. Business. Money. You know, he doesn't want to ruin financial deals with Saudi Arabia and take one of our top allies and isolate him, and so he's doing the tap dance. But this shows you, I love this answer because it shows you, like, you don't think this is the prevailing wisdom in Washington on the issue of Saudi Arabia? Of course it is. Of course it is. That's why they're still one of our top allies. So the idea is, if you're our ally, you can do whatever you want to do, and we're not going to be mad at you. We claim to, look, we're the world police. We believe in human rights and freedom and democracy. well, what about the fact that your top ally believes in the opposite of human rights and freedom and democracy? Well, look, cultures are different, and we got to be tolerant of other cultures, including tolerant of intolerance in other cultures. Wait, which is it? Do you care about human rights and freedom and democracy, or do you not? Do you care about it, or do you not? Well, we care about it, except we don't care about it when it's our allies. But we care about it. No, this is the fundamental contradictions at the heart of U.S. empire, and it's being exposed right here in front of the world. Now, furthermore, he also wouldn't call Rodrigo Duterte, the Philippines president, a human rights violator. Rodrigo Duterte is the guy who repeatedly said, I'm going to kill drug users, I'm going to kill drug addicts, I'm going to kill drug sellers, I'm going to kill anybody who's involved in drugs, I kill them. I'm not just going to kill them, you're going to kill them. I want you to kill them, and don't worry, the police department is not going to crack down on you. I am in favor of you slaughtering these people. And then, guess what? Thousands of them have died. Over 2,000 people have been killed. So he's calling for a flat-out genocide of drug users, and this guy's like, human rights. You know, human rights are in the eye of the beholder. As the great philosopher Descartes once said, what does get the Just say they're fucking violators of human rights. They're the most obvious violators of human rights ever, 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 ever. And then also, by the way, just to add another little cherry on top to the story here, Rodrigo Duterte, we reported the story the other day. Apparently he was, and maybe still is, addicted to fentanyl, one of the most powerful drugs in the world. So, yeah, of course, he's so, I'm against drug users. That's it. Let's kill them. Kill them all. Because he's behind the scenes like, oh, give me my fentanyl, bro. Oh, I'm so high right now. So it's deep hypocrisy. But there you have it, our next Secretary of State. By the way, allow me to be crystal clear about my take on Rex Tillerson. Should he be Secretary of State? No. Why shouldn't he be Secretary of State? He was the CEO of ExxonMobil, like, forever. So there's so many built-in conflicts of interest with that that you could never override. I mean, this guy has deep ties to all these countries around the world because he's done business deals with them. Now, some might say that's a good thing. No, it's a bad thing for this exact reason, because he would overlook things like massive human rights violations because, oh, look, they're a good business partner, so we'll look the other way while they act like terrorists. So deep, incredible financial conflicts of interest. And furthermore, connect the dots for me a little bit here. The oil. Let's take the oil, let's take the oil, let's take the oil, as Donald Trump said all the time during the campaign and before the campaign. And now he picked the CEO of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. I wonder if he plans on taking the oil and jacking natural resources, not just from the Middle East, but I would venture to say probably anywhere. They're probably going more full-scale like the Cold War than we could imagine. So, you know, during the Cold War, what did we do? It was a hot war in many respects because we toppled South American governments, for example. Obviously, we went to Vietnam. So our argument was, no, if you know, one of these tiny little random nations falls to socialism or communism, well, then it's going to be in Nebraska in like 17 minutes, so we have to fight it everywhere. So we'd massacre civilians and we'd overthrow democratic governments and put in fascist puppets because communism is so bad, we got to do it. But what was that really about? It was a mask for imperialism and us for business interests and us jacking natural resources. I have a feeling that under a guy like Rex Tillerson with Donald Trump at the helm and John Bolton at the as Deputy Secretary of State, the most hawkish neocon ever, that they're going to be doing a lot more stuff like that, the overt, blatant, like, yeah, we're just going to topple countries and take what we want. Because Trump told you he wanted to do it, and Rex Tillerson is the CEO of ExxonMobil. He has the most incentive of anybody to want to do shit like that. So this is disastrous. And also, by the way, I love how half the hearing was him having to distance himself from all the things that Trump says that buck the establishment narrative. So with Trump not being as hawkish against Russia, they were asking Tillerson, like, but you're hawkish against Russia, right? But you believe in NATO, and you want to build up NATO troops on the border of Russia and further escalate maybe to World War III. You want to do that, right? You want to maybe start World War III, right? I know Trump doesn't, but you want to. And what did Tillerson do? Like a bitch. Yes. No, yes, yes, yes. Russia. Terrible, horrible, enemy state, and we got to be vigilant, and yes, we need NATO, and yes, what they're doing in Syria is wrong, and yes, yeah, oh, Russia, bad, 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 bad. So, there we go. Even the few things about Trump that we thought, well, maybe decent, those things are long gone. The idea of, hey, let's not do intervention. Deputy Secretary of State John Bolton, and you think they're not going to try to do intervention? Really? Trump saying, hey, maybe we don't get into a war with Russia. Now every one of his picks around him has to genuflect to the CIA and to the hawkish elements in our government and say, no, yes, no, we want to do war with them. So this is a sad situation that we're in, and I feel like none of these people should be in any of the positions they are in. Need some WD-40 on this chair, son. It's creaky like a motherfucker. Okay, next. Next, blow me. All right, Jeff Sessions and his hearing. Jeff Sessions' hearing for the position of Attorney General continued yesterday, and he was asked a question about his extreme stance on marijuana.
Would you use our federal resources to investigate and prosecute sick people who are using marijuana in accordance with their state laws, even though it might violate federal law?
Well, I won't commit to never enforcing federal law, Senator Leahy, but absolutely it's a problem of resources for the federal government. The Department of Justice under Lynch and Holder set forth some policies that they thought were appropriate to define what cases should be prosecuted in states that have legalized, at least in some fashion, some parts of
marijuana. Do you agree with those guidelines?
I think some of them are truly valuable in evaluating cases, but fundamentally, the criticism I think that was legitimate is that they may not have been followed. Using good judgment about how to handle these cases will be a responsibility of mine. I know it won't be an easy decision, but I will try to do my duty in a fair and just way.
The only reason I mention it, you've been some very strong views. You even mandated the death penalty for anyone convicted of a second drug trafficking offense, including marijuana, even though mandatory death penalties are, of course, unconstitutional.
Good googly moogly. What? I didn't know that last one. I did know that Jeff Sessions said, quote, good people don't smoke marijuana. And he also made a joke that I used to like the KKK until I found out some of them smoke weed. That's one of those jokes where you go, that's so funny. What the fuck, man? Okay, so his answer is a really bad answer because I want to give you his first line. He was asked, hey, look, you know, with the states that are legalizing marijuana, what's the deal, son? What are you going to do? I mean, you are going to be the attorney general. You could prosecute them, because federal law overrides state law, and federal laws that marijuana is illegal. The state laws, if the people are in compliance with the state laws, will you do it? And he said, quote, I won't commit to never enforcing federal law. That's not what he asked you. He didn't ask you, hey, will you ever, enforce federal law? He asked you, in this specific instance, on this specific issue, when it comes to marijuana, and when at the state level you have individuals who are abiding 100% by state law on marijuana in states where it happens to be legal, would you go after them? Here's the only answer that's acceptable to that. No, I will not. He didn't give that answer. He didn't give that answer because he didn't believe that. He didn't give that answer because he really despises marijuana. He really despises drugs. He thinks they're all bad. He thinks you're a bad person if you use those substances. And he would have the authority to shut it all down like that. Again, this is what people don't understand about the way our government works and the way our system functions. You have a false sense of security right now about the recent gains on the issue of marijuana. Because just because the states legalize it doesn't mean the federal government can't shut it down. The Supremacy Clause of the Constitution means federal law overrides state law. So if an asshole government wanted to, on day one, they could shut it all down. And this is why you needed Obama and you need the Democrats to take it off Schedule 1, why you needed them to attempt to legalize it at a federal level or at least decriminalize it, but it wasn't done. So as a result, now we're at the whims of Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions. To be fair on this issue, I would defer to Trump's judgment a lot more than Jeff Sessions, because Trump, for all of his flaws, is not massively socially conservative. There's people who are way more socially conservative than him. Like on gay marriage, he says, I don't care, it's settled. On marijuana, I don't know his exact take on it, but I would imagine it's better than Jeff Sessions. So you're really kind of almost relying on the President Trump to say, Jeff, let him go. So that's not a good answer. Anything short of no is Jeff Sessions doing a tap dance to leave himself the leeway to go ahead and try that, to shut down. And it, not only recreational marijuana, they could shut down medical marijuana if they so choose. Medical. So this is terrible, and this is why you can't have this guy as Attorney General. If I was the Democrats, they say they can't obstruct him. I would make up a way to obstruct them. I would do a thing that's not a thing. I would do a hearing filibuster. I would, when it comes, it's my turn to ask questions, I would start asking him questions, and I wouldn't stop. And then when he stopped answering my questions, and when the chair committee kept asking me to yield, I'd say, I'm not going to yield my time. I'm going to keep going. You're over time. I don't care if I'm over time. I'm going to keep going. You want to stop me? Go ahead. Drag me out of here in cuffs. Drag me out of here. I don't care. This guy's not going to become Attorney General, and I would go through his entire abysmal record. I would give you his entire voting record, as we did on the show the other day in a long segment. I would tell you everything he's wrong on, everything he's bad on, everything he doesn't care about the will of the American people on, every time he didn't care about law and order as he claims to. And let's also, the final point I'll make on this real fast is, you do understand the hypocrisy of this too, right? Because the Republicans, especially guys like Jeff Sessions, their number one thing that they claim is states' rights. So in other words, get that damn federal government out of here. All we care about is the state, the states who we have authority to. We have federalism in this country. That means that the state, we care more about what the state says than what the Fed say. The Fed, we don't need no damn Washington telling us stuff. So they believe in states over the federal government. Unless on the specific political issue, the federal government happens to be more correct in their opinion. So the federal government, Jeff Sessions thinks, is more right on the issue of marijuana because it's still illegal than California where it's legal or Colorado where it's legal. So I believe in states' rights, except when I don't, except when it's convenient for me to believe in the federal government over the state. So massive hypocrisy too, because that's what the conservative Republicans say all the time. 10th Amendment, states' rights. Oh, shit, it's inconvenient now, so forget states' rights. So that's Jeff Sessions in a nutshell for you. Next. Mike Allen of Politico leaked what Hillary Clinton's cabinet appointments would have been, and oh boy, is it a disaster. So there's a few choices for each one, or for most of them there's a few choices, so I want to run through the list here for you, and then we'll discuss it a little bit. So Secretary of State, she wanted John Podesta, Bill Burns, or Joe Biden. Treasury Secretary, Sheryl Sandberg. Secretary of Labor, Howard Schultz. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Neera Tanden. Secretary of Commerce, Gregory Meeks, or Sheryl Sandberg, or Terry McAuliffe. Now, I understand that you guys might not know who a lot of those actors are, so let's run through it. Sheryl Sandberg is the COO of Facebook. And so if that's not bad enough, she was Larry Summers' chief of staff during his infamously bank-friendly deregulation spree and his tenure in Bill Clinton's Treasury Department. So she is as neoliberal as it gets, neoliberal to the core. Then we have Howard Schultz, who is the founder of Starbucks. Starbucks is a company that has long been super-duper hostile to organized labor, to unions. So, again, she wanted this guy for Secretary of Labor. We're just going after who's your Trump's pick? Because he's a fast food CEO and he's anti-labor. Well, Hillary's pick would have been anti-labor too. Now, to be fair, I don't know if Howard Schultz is nearly as bad as that guy, because that guy is an Ayn Rand devotee. So he doesn't believe in social safety net, doesn't believe in the minimum wage, doesn't believe in any of that shit. He might believe in some of it. But see, this is the whole problem, though. This is the whole problem with the spectrum in the U.S. in terms of politicians. You have Republicans who are flat-out crazy. I mean, I don't know what else to say. They're 100% sellout to corporations. And they mix that in with a heaping dose of social conservatism and Christian fundamentalism. So they're off-the-spectrum lunatics, and I have no interest in any of them. But then you have the Democrats, who are neoliberals. They're centrist or center-right corporatist establishment hacks. So it's bad and worse. Every time, bad and worse, bad and worse, bad and worse. So this really, that's who you want for Secretary of Labor. And then, of course, you have Terry McAuliffe, who an article in Slate calls, quote, perhaps the original corporate centrist Democrat. So, and I'm sick of it. We're sick of it. And that's why she fucking lost. Because you didn't actually make a case for progressivism and liberalism and change and moving the country in a better direction, in a more social democratic direction. You made an argument for the status quo, and people don't like the status quo. And the other guy was promising change, in many instances a worse kind of change, and they went for that over the no change. So, you know, you want to know why you lost? Oh, I don't know. Maybe start by looking at your own goddamn picks and understanding this isn't what America wants. You know, this reminds me like Hillary in the week leading up to the election day. She acted like it was already over, and what she was doing kind of proved that. So, like, for example, she was in Ohio where she was really down towards the end of the election, almost certainly going to lose it. What was she doing? Instead of giving, you know, speeches and pounding the pavement and ranting against TPP and talking about stuff like that, she had LeBron James come and like, talk at an event for her. That's, like, quintessential Hillary Clinton. Oh, don't worry, I'm this celebrity. Everybody loves me, even though they don't love me. And it's history, and we're going to move in this direction. And it just smelled disingenuous because it was. And you had a concert, an event, this giant thing where all these different celebrities came and performed, and there was a night where Obama gave a speech, and it was, oh, we're going to have the first female president. They popped champagne early on the flight, and what you don't get is, like, this was the problem. There are people out there, you know, they said the Democratic firewall fell. That's why she lost. So those angry white voters, the people yelled at Bernie Sanders because he got too many of them. Your voters are too white and too angry. Those are the people who lost the election for Hillary Clinton because they didn't believe her shit anymore. You know, in the Rust Belt, the former Democratic firewall, depressed factory areas, they were like, we'd rather have Trump than her. But she took it for granted. And shit like this, people, if they knew about her cabinet picks and they looked at this, they'd go, yeah, that's exactly why we voted against you. Now, again, Trump, his picks have been just as bad, if not worse. And, in fact, they probably are worse because we know all of the Goldman Sachs out the wazoo and the fast food CEO who doesn't believe in the minimum wage and the education secretary who doesn't believe in public education and who is a Christian fundamentalist. So his are worse. But he put on the facade of being anti-establishment more than she did. And I still don't think she gets it. You know, like, really, this was your cabinet. They're always going to diagnose the problem the exact wrong way. So what their response is going to be, no, go further right wing. Go further right wing, go more establishment, be safer, and then we would have won. So don't go more progressive. Never go more progressive. Always go more right wing, more establishment, because that's always the answer. That's not always the answer. That was the fucking problem. All right, now let's go to NBC. Talk about some good news. Big report out from NBC News here. Listen to this. President Barack Obama has put Chelsea Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst serving a 35-year sentence for leaking classified material, on his short list for a possible commutation, a Justice Department source told NBC News. Do it. Oh, my God, you got to do it. Stop. Just do it. 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 Yeah, that's all my commentary on this segment. Just do it. You know it's the right thing to do. So Chelsea Manning released thousands of, I think they call them cables. I don't know why, but I don't even know exactly what that means, to be honest, which is slightly embarrassing. But she released all this information, and a lot of the information showed the crimes that we were committing, that our government was committing. For example, the big one was in Iraq. We had, our military kill civilians, then they killed the first responders the entire time. They're laughing and having a good time. They don't know. They say, is it media? I don't know. Kill them anyway. And it turned out it was media, and it was kids, and then it was the first responders. They killed them all. So they leaked that, shows us committing war crimes, and instead of going after the people who did that, they went after Chelsea for leaking it. So, okay, that's a hero where I'm from. That's called a whistleblower. Okay, you're exposing government that should be exposed. Now we know what the government is doing with our money in our name, and it's not okay. And we can try to fix this issue now because you exposed it. Well, in response to that, the government said, no, we're going to put you in jail. So you have a 35-year sentence. Now, I don't know exactly how that unfolds because I think they cut it for whatever reason after a certain amount of time or whatever. But I don't care what it is. If she's in jail for 17 minutes, it's too long, and she's already been in there way longer than that. Furthermore, while she's been in there, she's tried to commit suicide twice. And what do they do in response to that? They go, oh, we're going to put you in solitary confinement. That's like the last thing you should ever do for somebody who's suicidal. There's an argument that putting somebody in solitary confinement is torture, even if they're totally mentally healthy. But if you put them in there and they're not, well, I mean, that's beyond torture. That's like a whole other level of torture. We got to invent a new word for what that is. So to commute her sentence or pardon her, for fuck's sake, you got to do it, man. You got to do it. You know it's the right thing to do. And while you're at it, do something for Snowden. I don't know exactly what the legal situation is with that because he hasn't been brought up on trial, hasn't been convicted. So I don't know if you could, like, pre-pardon him or commute him or whatever. But and Snowden was tweeting about this to his credit. He was saying, if you do anything in your last few days in office, if you do one commutation or one pardon, make it Chelsea Manning. So he's in Russia. He doesn't even want to be in Russia, by the way. And so that's a very, self-sacrificial thing to do. Sacrificial word, I think it is. But don't. What are you waiting for, Obama? You know it's the right thing to do. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. And remember, Obama has had a war on whistleblowers. This is something that, in my big long segment grading Obama's presidency, I actually forgot to put that part in, and it's an important part, so it should have been put in. But under the bad category, war on whistleblowers, he's used the Espionage Act more against whistleblowers, people who leak to the media important information, than all the other presidents combined. So you want to have at least a little bit of redemption for that? Pardon Chelsea Manning or commute her sentence. Do it right now because this is not okay. It's not okay that she's locked up. She's a hero. She deserves a fucking medal and a statue, not to be locked up somewhere. And I think in your heart of hearts you get that. So do the right thing and do it now. Do, do, do. Ding, ding, ding. All right, now... let me go to the Dylann Roof story because I got to do it. I got to squeeze it in today. A jury in South Carolina recently found Dylann Roof guilty. He's, of course, the white supremacist terrorist who killed 9 innocent churchgoers at a Bible study. Well, we learned the other day about his sentence. So he's found guilty, and then it was a while before they gave him a sentence. Now we know his sentence, and it is death. They're giving him the death penalty. A week ago when he was found guilty, he said this: I would like to make it crystal clear, I do not regret what I did. I am not sorry. I have not shed a tear for the innocent people I killed. I do feel sorry for the innocent white children forced to live in this sick country. And I do feel sorry for the innocent white people that are killed daily at the hands of the lower races. I have shed a tear of self-pity for myself. I feel pity that I had to do what I did in the first place. I feel pity that I had to give up my life because of a situation that should never have existed. So this is one of those instances of, By the way, he was open from day one. Like, they caught him at the scene, or it wasn't at the scene, I'm sorry. But they knew exactly who it was. He was caught red-handed, and he was like, yeah, let's stop, let's cut to the chase. Everybody knows I did it. Duh, I did it. So this is an instance where we know he's guilty. We know he did it. We know the crime was above and beyond gruesome on a whole nother level, as grotesque as it gets. And we also know he's totally unapologetic, and there's a 0% chance for rehabilitation. Now, putting all those things together, now we come to the conversation I've had with you guys 1,000 times, and I'll probably end up having it 1,000 more. Some of you agree with my position on this, some of you despise my position on this. But see, I've always been in the camp on the death penalty of, or not always, but recently, for a while now, I've been in the camp on the death penalty of, I'm against it because we oftentimes get the wrong people. And 4% of the time, according to a study, it's innocent people on death row. So I can't have a system in existence that kills the wrong people 4% of the time, because what that says is society is okay with murder and murdering with our tax dollars if it's only 4% of the time. I'm okay with murder 0% of the time. I'm only okay with violence in cases of self-defense. So I would scrap the death penalty system, and you'd have to give somebody like Dylann Roof life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, having said that, am I going to shed a tear? Am I going to feel bad? Am I going to think it was an injustice done if Dylann Roof was put to death? File that under, fuck no. In fact, I'm probably going to feel pretty happy about it. Now, you could say that makes me a bad liberal. You could say that's a fairly conservative thing to believe. But look, I don't think it's illogical. I don't. Because in a case like Dylann Roof, there's 0% chance for rehabilitation. We know what he did, and you're simply eliminating a problem. He is a problem. You are eliminating him. So I don't know. Does that make me a bad guy? I don't think there's an equivalence between, what he did. So he murdered innocent people, and now the state putting him to death, now the state is equally immoral for this act. No, but this act is nowhere near equally immoral to murdering 9 innocent people. It's just not. And to try to equate those two things, like, well, you know, you're proving killing is wrong by killing. But that's a sloppy, like, gross, false equivalence to a much more complex situation that denies the entire context and denies the fact that this guy actually is a monster. And this is a sentence that some would argue, maybe rightly, is just. So I don't, like, in other words, here's the point I'm making. Even if you're a liberal who is against the death penalty, and you're against it for reasons other than my reason, the only reason I'm against it is because we kill the wrong people. If we could always get the right person, I'd theoretically be okay with it, if we only do it in the worst circumstances and all that stuff. But if you're a liberal who's against it, and you're against it for other reasons, more liberal reasons than I am, don't fall into the trap. And that trap is, if you go out and advocate for somebody like Dylann Roof, spare his life, man, you are handing a political victory over to the Republicans in a way that you can't even fathom. Because then you get to smear the left as the typical bleeding heart liberal who is so liberal that they're willing to side with the perpetrator over the victim and paint the perpetrator as some sort of victim. And I think that you're going to alienate more people and lose the argument against the death penalty in the long run if you do that. I think if we use my argument against the death penalty, and I'm not the only one to say this, I don't want to be self-aggrandizing here. People have come up with this way before me, and it's true. But if you use the argument of, oh no, fuck Dylann Roof, I'm fine with him dying, but I would get rid of the death penalty because you got it, because we killed the wrong people, I think that argument resonates more, and I think that argument gives us a better chance to win it in the court of public opinion and then change the policy on it. Because when you look at the numbers right now, the death penalty is one of few areas where the American people are actually conservative. On almost every issue, the American people are liberal, but on the death penalty, they're conservative. They're fine with it. They're fine with the death penalty. So that means you have to come with a convincing argument to change their mind. And I think the convincing argument is, we kill the wrong people all the time. You can't do that. But I do sympathize with them on issues like this, where I'm not going to feel bad when Dylann Roof dies. I'm going to be a little happier when Dylann Roof dies. And I don't think it serves the broader purpose for justice of getting rid of the death penalty to try to pretend like it's the right thing to do to save Dylann Roof. And actually, the final point I want to make on this real quick is very, very interesting fact. You have, I'm not sure if the poll is just black people in the U.S. versus white people in the U.S. or if it was black people in South Carolina versus white people in South Carolina. But very interesting that I think it's just 35% of blacks say, yes, Dylann Roof should get the death penalty. Only 35%. Whites, it's over 60% that say Dylann Roof should get the death penalty. So you have a racial disparity in the death penalty there, big time. Now, why is that? That's the question. I don't know, I'm speculating, but my guess is if you were to speak to the African-American community, they would say, well, the reason why I'm against it is because I'm against it, period, because there's a giant racial disparity with the death penalty, and they oftentimes kill the wrong people. So, and that's much more known in the African-American community because there's a racial disparity in how it's applied. So in other words, a white person and a black person can commit the same crime, and a black person is far more likely to get the death penalty. So I think the black community knows that, and they're like, this thing, it's not, like, stop acting like it's objective and that, like, it's a policy that's applied in a rational way. It's not. So only 35% are for killing Dylann Roof, and that's with knowing he did it. And the white people are like, fuck it, off with his head. So maybe I'm like, I don't know, this walking, breathing stereotype here, but that is fascinating. And it's also fascinating that the church where he murdered people came out and said, don't kill him. Don't kill him. I agree in principle. You can't have the death penalty because we get the wrong people. But no, I don't feel bad for Dylann Roof. I don't feel bad for a split second. Fuck that guy. Okay. All right, one more. Wait, do I have time? No. Wrong. I mean, I do have a little bit of time, but I want to give this story more justice than that. So that means we're going to cut it off a wee bit early here, lads. We got 3 minutes left in the show. Deal with it, y'all. All right, so love you guys. You know the deal. Come back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Already got two awesome ones in the chamber for you, and we'll have a full show. So much love. Mwah. Kisses, smooches. I'm out.